Inside Motorsport, brought to you today by Summernats 2000, the biggest and best car show in Australia. The Summernats Car Festival is on again from January 6th to 9th. There'll be your old favourites, including the Burnout Comp, Horsepower Hero Dyno Test, Elite and Street Judging, and Tough Street Monsters, plus fireworks, super cruisers, and live music. Don't miss seeing Legacy from the USA, the world's best 57 Chevy show car. Summernats 2000, Thursday, January 6th till Sunday the 9th. It's the biggest and best car show in Australia, sponsors of Triple S.
From the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Welcome back and a happy new year to Con Magro, who joins us on the line now from the Golden State, as they call it, and plenty of racing, plenty of great racing right throughout the season 99, 2000 so far. And Con, after bidding farewell to the World Series for the final time at Claremont Speedway, you had to have been very impressed by the winner there, Donny Schatz.
Well, a very happy new year to you and all your listeners. Yes, I was. In fact, I brought young Donny Schatz to Australia originally, and I'll go as far as to say that he's probably the greatest import we've ever bought in a four-wheel division. Up until, I think, when he raced last night, he had been on the podium in every race he'd raced in Australia just about in two seasons, and no driver, not even the great AJ Foyt, the late great Bob Two Gun Tattersall or Mel Kenyon had achieved those sorts of results. This kid has just turned 22 years of age. He's from Minnow in Dakota, an outstanding speedway driver. And I think that in the next couple of years, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets an IndyCar driver or a NASCAR driver.
Yes, he is certainly being awarded every accolade. And as you mentioned, some of the people who have come to Australia in the past, AJ Foyt, Tattersall, Kenyon, also another Indianapolis 500, two-time winner in Johnny Rutherford. And another American who's made a few trips to Australia, Ron Sleepy Tripp, is joining the Speed Car Brigade at Newcastle Speedway next weekend. One name very familiar to Speed Car fans.
Yeah, well, Sleepy Tripp, a very old friend of mine, originally was a motorcycle racer. And my background came from motorcycling originally. Not that I was ever in his league, but I just throw that in for what it's worth. But Sleepy Tripp, of course, went on to be the most winningest speed car driver in American history. And I've had the honour and the pleasure to have had a few beers with him. But I've also seen him race a car. And I think that there's probably been no finer in a speed car. But Donny Schatz, at this particular stage, takes my tip as far as a sprint car driver is concerned, and I think without doubt he'll go down in the annals of Australian Speedway history as the number one import we've bought from no matter what division you call in the four wheels. Of course, Ivan Major and Ovi Funnan, and we're in the two wheels, but this young guy at such a tender age is just doing such big things.
Well, whilst we're talking history, of course, a very, very important meeting in all of Australian Speedway held last night at Claremont Raceway, and a meeting for Speed Car followers that has been on the program for over 30 years.
Yes, the New Year Speed Car Derby, and Michael Figlamini, dual national champion, winner of American races in the year 1999, started 2000 off with a brand new car, a car that was built and designed by himself called a fighter car, with a brand new Fontana engine, and the young guy went out and won the New Year Derby. 26 cars, the competition, the speed car competition here at Claremont at the moment, I don't think I've ever seen it like it is at the moment. Every driver that goes out there has the possibility of winning, but there are a couple of guys that are just that much better, and of course Figlamini leads that bunch.
Yes, and one thing, Con, that does interest me with how Australian Speedway is once again refocused and heading in a new professionalism, as they say, is that all the speed car drivers this year, traditionally a couple, at least up to three or four, have gone to race in the World Speed Car Derby held at Western Springs Speedway in New Zealand. And this year, no Australians want to leave home. They all want to stay here and keep the racing in Australia, which is the first time since probably the early 70s that Australia hasn't been represented in the World Speedcar Derby.
Well, actually, I don't blame them. I mean, let's face it, there's no better country in the world than Australia, but seeing that as being very parochial, I think the racing that we're producing at Parramatta, Newcastle, Claremont, and other tracks around this country really gives the guys a buzz. And why go to New Zealand when you can have just as fierce a competition at home? We bring in some very good imports. And as you know, the big thing at Claremont this year is the fact that we're running the 50th Australian Speedcar Grand Prix, and the Revell name is very well represented there. It's a race that's got a huge amount of history and prestige. Some people say it's better than the Australian title, but I won't go as far as to say that because I think the Australian title is the one. But if you're going to win another race besides the Australian title, you'd want to win the Australian Speedcar Grand Prix. And, of course, we're going to run that on the 25th of February in the year 2000. And, of course, we've got coming together. And, in fact, I just spoke to Terry King. We've got the Jenkins boys. We've got young Adam Bain, Stephen Graham, and the likes that are coming over to Perth to race in that meeting. So I think that our guys are building themselves up to it. And the competition is just showing the public in Western Australia that speed car racing is very much alive and very, very well.
And, of course, still plenty of racing at the Claremont Speedway before you do pull up stumps at the end of this season. And I must ask, how is the preparations going at the new circuit, whose name I just cannot get my tongue around?
Well,
Kirrawan?
Let me say to you that it's a very spooky feeling to think that we completed event number 11 last night. We have 25 meetings. So we're just about at the halfway mark of the 99-2000 season. And it's a funny sort of a feeling. I often sit back and say, this time next year, when you're talking to me, I'll be talking about the Kwinana Motorplex, which is going to be built about 40, 50 kilometres from the city of Perth in an industrial area to the south of Perth. And it's hard to think that after 73 years at the Claremont Showgrounds, the world's oldest and longest-running dirt track showground speedway is about to go to that heaven of where speedway tracks go, I suppose, and no one's really fighting for us other than us within the speedway fraternity. If we were Australian Rules Football or Rugby League, you know, people would be up in arms about it, but we're going and we're getting kicked out and no one seems to really worry about it but ourselves.
It does seem, though, that when you talk about Rugby League has cast off a few of its original members, and as it could be seen here, it could be to the detriment of our sport.
Yeah, I suppose. So, but why would you want your son to play Rugby League when you get your head rearranged every second the time you play the game? So, and football's just as bad, I suppose. The only thing that's in attraction to it, they've got the big sponsorship and the big money, but Speedway is a sport, and I think that it was just recently released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics that motorsport in Australia is second only to Australian rules football as far as crowd concerned, and Speedway plays a huge part in that. And over a million people a year flock through the turnstiles coast to coast, and yet the general media ignored us.
It is indeed. And Con, a very happy new year to you. As you have now the 8th of January, the next big meeting on the card.
7th of January, we have Danny Lasowski arriving tomorrow night in Perth, Randy Hannigan and Brad Furr, three great Americans. Of course, Lasowski was last season's world number one. He was number two this season, the highest paid speedway driver in the world as far as four wheels are concerned, and we're looking forward to him being here. He's only here for 2 weeks, but the big news is the fact that Sean Curran, who is preparing his car for him in Perth, he's going back to Honolulu after he races at Bunbury on the 15th of January. He's the best man at his mate's wedding on the 21st of January, and then he's going to fly back and he's going to drive at the Warrnambool Classic. So how's that for a little bit of scoop news? And this is the first time it's been released on Australian radio on your show, because the fact that he will be flying back to do the Warrnambool Classic for the West Australian car owner and Sean Curran.
Well, that's fantastic news, and of course the dude, just an unbelievable driver. And
a legend.
Coupled with the news that I received, which you may or may not know, but the Wild Child coming back after that serious accident in the United States at Battle Creek, I think it was, he has announced that he will be running the full season of World of Outlaw Racing next year too. So the Wild Child and the Dude going head-to-head once again, it'll have all the Sprint Car fans licking their lips.
Well, that'll be good, Cole. Little Jack's one hell of a race car driver. So I think we're going to have a great year at Claremont. We've got, 12, 13 meetings to go before the end of it. And another big news is that I've been talking to Gary Rush, and Gary Rush always graced Claremont Speedway with a lot of dignity, and he would like to come back and race the last night at Claremont, and we're currently at the moment having talks to Gary, and we hope to have him as one of our major attractions when we say goodbye to the grand old lady of Speedway.
Well, we certainly hope that one can come about, because I know people who have flown out from America to watch Gary Rush race at Claremont when you had the World Sprint Car Championships there. Well, it must be 10 years ago now.
It was. As a matter of fact, talking about people, we have 45 English people that are coming with James Easter, who is a well-known British Speedway administrator and a former manager of the Australian Speedway team, although he's an Englishman. But he's bringing 45 British Speedway fans. The main reason for their trip to Australia is, of course, to walk across the hallowed ground of Claremont. They want to pick up a cup of Claremont Speedway dirt, and they want to take that back to England and tell everyone that the place that launched the Speedway way back in 1927, Claremont, and then from Fremantle in West Australia, the first contingent of Australian riders took the sport to England, now to the world. They're going to come and say goodbye in their own special way, and 45 Speedway fans are going to do that. Well, I think that'll be a very moving moment. That'll be on about Thursday, the 20th of January, and then, of course, we race the 21st on the Friday night, and then down to Bunbury on the 22nd, so that'll be a special moment in history, although ever so late.
Mm, it will be. I will bid you farewell now, Con, but we will be definitely speaking before the season's out, and congratulations on another successful half season. We look forward to catching up with you before the end.
Yeah, we do too, and I wish everyone a very happy new year. Speedway generally around Australia has been doing it pretty tough, but I believe it is a great sport. The only thing that's probably lacking is the real dollars that it deserves, but maybe one day before I go to the big speedway in the sky that there might be a few extra bucks in it for the riders and for the drivers, and of course then the promoters in turn, and everyone can enjoy the sport a lot more.
Thanks very much, Con Margaret.
God bless you.
Us on the line from Ravenswood Raceway over there in the Golden State. It is also a very good afternoon to Peter Pike, who's the racing manager at Ravenswood. And as like Claremont, Ravenswood is also set to close with the opening of the Motorplex complex. And I guess for Ravenswood, not quite the same bittersweet feelings about the new venue, because not quite the history in the sport that Ravenswood has, as does Claremont being one of the founding speedways in the world.
That's correct, Craig, and we're actually part of Claremont Speedway. Claremont Speedway and Ravenswood Raceway share a very similar financial background, and we moved about 2.5-3 years ago with the view, of course, going through into our brand new facility at Kwinana, and it's very, very exciting. But Ravenswood opened in November the 30th, 1969, and of course that makes this not only our final year at Ravenswood, but our 30th year. We're doing a lot to celebrate what will be a very memorable year, the 30th and final year at Ravenswood Raceway of drag racing here.
Now, tonight you're racing, as we speak, with a New Year's Street meeting, but very soon we'll see the USA Jet Dragsters out on the track. In fact, I think at the end of this week.
That's correct, yes. Today we've got probably our biggest street meeting of the year. It's the annual Holden versus Ford. We run numerous street meetings on Wednesday nights, Saturday nights and Sundays. But one event every year, this is it today, the Holden versus Ford. Suddenly everybody grows a third leg, everybody grows a bit more hair, and they take it all a little bit more seriously, as they're not only racing for themselves, but they're defending their favourite brand of machine. But as you said, Craig, next weekend on Saturday, we've got the USA Jet Drags, the team flying into West Australia, and they're going to start their racing tour of Australia for the 2000 year here at Ravenswood Raceway. We've got Chuck Haynes in Gravity Storm, and we've got Leyland Blee in the Pacifier, both powered by J60 jet engines, both capable of 450 kilometres an hour in just 5 seconds. And of course, they start off their tour here at Ravenswood next Saturday, January the 8th. Charge off to Adelaide Raceway in South Australia, of course, on January the 15th. From there, they move across to Calder Park. They go from Calder Park to Willowbank Raceway, and from Willowbank they return to Calder for the Australian Nationals before heading back home to the States.
Mm. Now, also a very important meeting that you had was the third round of the Nitro Funny Cars, which were only 2 weeks ago.
No, and what it was, we had actually a match race over here, which has been done in America now very successfully, but we had one over here, which is Australia's top fuel champion, Robin Kirby, up against our local funny car hero, Alan Dobson, in the Green Machine, which is, of course, Alan and Cheryl Green's Nitro Funny Car. It was a huge event, and for the proper fans, the Nitro Funny Car came out on top, and notwithstanding, unfortunately, Robin Kirby actually had some problems on the day and allowed Dobson to run three fantastic passes and to take the 1999 Nitro Challenge.
Mm. All right, now everything in the Golden State is building up towards the big one, of course, the Marlowe's Nationals, Western Nationals.
That's correct, yes, that's our big event. Marlowe Auto Parts are sponsoring the event for the third year running, and Marlowe's may not be a name that you know in New South Wales, but they've just opened up new branches in Victoria. They own, of course, Rocket Brothers in South Australia. They're part of the huge Marlowe's Auto Parts chain in Western Australia, and they're looking to expand in. Their event is our final record-breaking event at Ravenswood Raceway. It features round six of the Australian Top Door Slammer Championship Series. And, of course, we saw here at the Golden State about a month and a half ago, Dave Cooper from South Australia won that event. And, of course, his runner-up to him was Robin Judd, a local West Australian, and his horse, Judy Baker. They're all charging off now to Willowbank Raceway, where they race round three on January the 15th, part of the New Year series up at Willowbank Raceway. A huge event. Dave Cooper leading the point score. Second, of course, is the perennial favourite, Victor Bray. In third place, Western Australia's Dave Simpson. In fourth place, Western Australia's Robert Judd. And, of course, those guys now, because of their point score, are having to charge across to Willowbank to contest the third round. And that's great for the series, as we've got about 12 or 14 door slammers charging around the country in the chase for the elusive number one place on the side of their vehicle.
Yeah, it is going to be a great series. And, well, we look forward to hearing how everything goes. Of course, the Marlowe's Western Nats is, of course, the one that, well, everyone just looks forward to. It's a very big event over there, and we're all looking forward to seeing how that one gets underway in, I think it's March 20?
March 4th, 2000, and it'll be a fantastic event. It's normally a two-day event, but this year we're running it just as a one-day event, and when we move to our new home in Kwinana, of course, we'll revert back to the two-day format, and even though we're just running the one-day this year, we still have a huge number of interstate entrants coming across. We're getting phone calls every day from interstaters chasing the bonus points on offer in Western Australia.
All right, then. Thanks very much for taking the time out to join us here on Inside Motorsport, and we look forward to catching up with you as the big events keep coming out there at Ravenswood.
Yes, thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you later on and catching up with all your listeners at a later date. Thank you very much, Craig.
Yes, and very interesting catching up with the people from the Western Australian racing scene, and of course two tracks there about to close down, both with amazing pieces of history behind them. Look, talking about history behind them, Stirling Crawford Moss OBE. It has been awarded to him. He has been made a KBE in the New Year's Honours List for service to motor racing. During his career, he competed in 494 motor races, rallies, sprints. He won 222 of them, a name that probably doesn't often enough raise up and launch itself into the front of a lot of people's top 10 drivers of the century, or top 10 motor racing drivers in history, but certainly one that deserves to be there. In more Formula One news, got some great Formula One news coming up for you now. I'm trying to get confirmation of this story, but unfortunately I haven't got it yet. Jacques Villeneuve and Danny Minogue were set to get married in Sydney at the start of the new year, according to many press reports. Well, I'm been trying to chase through the Grand Prix Corporation, if that is in fact true. They, after meeting this year at the Spanish Grand Prix, which certainly made it a memorable event for them, but not so for the Bars team, who had another DNF. But Villeneuve and Danny Minogue are set to have wed in the last few days. Now, staying with his former team, Williams, they announced that they will launch their 2000 Challenger on the 10th of January, according to the BBC. The team have said that Ralf Schumacher will be their number one driver this season, this season and have dismissed reports that Alex Zanardi has lost his place as the second driver. Ralph, meanwhile, has spoken out about the new BMW engine in terms of its power. The BMW is already at the level of the Supertech. A weak point remains the height and weight of the engine, but that can be quickly overcome. Jordan has predicted for has a surprise prediction for Eddie. Eddie Jordan has said that he doesn't expect Irvin to find it easy, being Johnny Herbert's teammate in 2000. This quote, he's gone in there in a blaze of publicity on a big contract, but he won't like being beaten by Johnny. He'll get frustrated, and it could be very interesting. Johnny killed Eddie in their recent tests at Jerez, and there is every chance he will be surprising him again when the season starts. Johnny's been there for a year. He knows how the team, the car, and he has finished on a season high. So interesting what Eddie Jordan's views are of Eddie Irvine's plans. In news closer to home, a new bidder for 51% stake in Arrows has emerged. Yes, Rupert Manwaring, erstwhile boss of Lotus, Tyrrell and Honda's erstwhile solo Formula One project. Walkinshaw has denied selling the team, but the reality is that he may have little to say in the matter, with Morgan Greenfold owning 50% and Prince Malik known to be selling his 25% through the HSBC. Now, Manwaring's consortium is said to be offering in UK pounds $25 million for the 51% stake. Benetton, Rocco Benetton, has spoken about his hopes for 2000. We know what it is like to win, and we want to have that feeling again. We hope 2000 will give us a slight leg up in our luck so we can show everyone how hard we work. Moving from Formula One to NASCAR, it seems like a large jump, but we'll make it anyway, if I can ever find the right button to press. Oh, gee, I love coming back into Studio A. We normally broadcast here at Triple S Studios from Studio B. And I must admit to you, it's taken me a while to get used to the older studio. And, well, it's been a lot of fun anyway. Plenty of racing action still to come on Inside Motorsport. And, well, we mentioned that Dodge earlier in the year, Dodge has announced plans to return to the NASCAR Winston Cup circuit in 2001, and rumours automatically started about its involvement with Petty Enterprises. Well, those agreements seem to have come around full circle and have a foundation. In fact, the last stories indicate that Petty Enterprises has already signed a deal with Chrysler. Lesmo, you'll be enjoying this one. The formal announcement is probably going to be made at the North American International Auto Show that's scheduled for January 11th in Detroit. A version of the NASCAR Dodge Intrepid is expected to be unveiled at the Detroit show, bearing STP Petty markings. Dodge is the official vehicle of the Skip Barber School of Racing, and it supplies power plants for the Barber Dodge Pro Series, Formula Dodge Race Series race cars, and Dodge is returning Chrysler's 14-year absence from stock car racing when it won the manufacturer's championship in 1970 and 75. Dodge has already collected 160 victories, most of them coming with drivers Lee and Richard Petty, Buddy Baker and David Pearson. Chrysler's plans for 2001 call for two Dodge teams with a total of five cars. One of the teams will be owned and managed by former Hendrick Motorsport team manager Ray Everingham. Petty currently fields cars for John Andretti and Kyle Petty, with Adam Petty, Kyle's son, scheduling to run five Winston Cup races next season. Petty Enterprises already runs Dodge Ram trucks in the NASCAR Series and has hired ex-Winston Cup driver Steve Grissom to drive for the team. Now, Grissom will be heavily involved in testing on the 2001 Intrepid between his truck duties. Changing tact once again, but staying in the United States, a great story here. We already heard it, I already mentioned it in that interview with Con Migro, but Jack Hortenchild, one of the most popular drivers in the Pennzoil World of Outlaws Series history, has announced that his plans to return to this series in 2000. The decision to come back with the series full-time was
really bound around last year, and well, we're going to start the year without a sponsor and hope to pick one up along the way. The Wild Child is only competed at 38 events last year in the World of Outlaws season, finishing 16th in the point standings. He recorded a top 10 finish in 16 A features, including 9 top 5 victories. The highlight of the season was driving the Ellens 22 Maxim to victory in the Gold Cup, a race of champions at the Silver Dollar Speedway, for a second consecutive year. Among his most notable victories that year was the King's Royal Championship at Eldora Speedway and the first Gold Cup race of the champions at the Silver Dollar Speedway. He also won 5 straight features at the legendary Knoxville Raceway, including the Ethanol Classic. He finished 7th in the point standings, 47th top 10 finishes, including 34 in the top 5. Now, we might just quickly jump tacks once again, and let's have a go here. Joining us on the line back home from another year in Europe, and this time mostly in Britain, James Courtney. Well, we caught up with you midway through the year, and you're starting to come to grips with the Formula Fords, and by the end of the season, finishing 2nd behind Marcus Ambrose at the Formula Ford Festival just proved how much you had come to grips with everything.
Oh, yeah, the car and I got a lot better towards the end of the year, so which has helped me with my learning with how to understand the car, and the car got better, so come on quite good.
Mm. You also got to enjoy quite a bit of success in the British Championship, and that must be heartening, and also must be a very... it must have also got you well seen, because you've now got the number one seat at Van Diemen, which everyone expects whoever's got that seat to go on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, well, the team was impressed with how I learnt this year and my racecraft and feedback, so they were happy to give me the good drive, which I'm willing to take and grab with both hands and run with it.
Mm. Now, from the carts, obviously the suspension was the biggest thing you had to come to grips with.
Yeah, at first when I got in the car, it felt like it was going to roll over, because with the kart, you have no roll at all. The kart is really stiff, and the Formula Ford, it actually has quite a bit of, not as much as a road car, but quite a bit of roll, so you can get the tyres to work, and that was quite difficult to get used to.
Mm. How have you found racing in England and racing on the undercard to the British Touring Car Championship, as opposed to what you're doing with the carts, where the carts are really separate vents?
Well, it's been quite good. I've met a lot of people, because they've been at the same races as what I've been. And also, I think it's really good for the younger drivers, because the older team managers get to, like, from the touring cars and from the three teams and whatever, because they're racing at the same event, so you get to just have a look and see how they go, and then it helps us out a lot as well.
Mm. Now, Alan Gow has been a big part of your move in Formula Ford, and obviously with his support, you're hoping to, this year, expand on what you learnt last year.
Yeah, exactly. Alan's done a hell of a lot for me. I wouldn't be where I am now if it wasn't for him, so I owe it to him, really. But, yeah, we work well as a team. We're more like best mates than sort of business partners, if you want. But yeah, he's been really good for me, and he's also introduced me to a lot of people.
Mm. And I guess spending most of the year in a country that speaks the same first language as you probably didn't hurt either.
No, it was good. I didn't have to learn another language for another year. Every year I seem to go to a different place and have to learn another language, but this year was quite good.
All right, and this year, obviously, you'll be heading back over to Europe in the early part of 2000, and obviously wanting to get straight back into the Van Diemen seat to develop the new car.
Yeah, exactly. We already did it a few test days before I came back, but there's always room for improvement in the car, and I think we've got some sort of idea where we need it for when we get back, but the car's as quick as last year's already, so it's looking pretty promising.
Mm. And, well, some of the other races, you did a couple of the European rounds as well of the Formula Ford Championship this year.
Yeah, we raced at Spa and also at Zandvoort, which was a really good experience. At Spa, it was awesome. I was on pole 2 seconds, which was quite crazy. It's hard to come to grips with at first, but it was pretty good.
Mm. Michael Hoond, I asked him about his future, and he mentioned that he would like to go do some racing in the Kart FedEx Champ Car Series.
Exactly. When I won the first Junior World Championship and said, like, this is what I wanted to do, and I sort of had a look through the higher categories, and there was no other Australians in there, and I thought, geez, I'm going to be the one that clears the way for from everyone. But now Mark and a few other guys have gotten over there and start doing it as well, which is helping me get through there a bit easier.
Mm. And as you said, you're heading back over to England. Where are you based in England? In London or...?
No, a place near Northampton. It's called Withybrook. It's right near Donington, about 20 minutes from Donington and 40 minutes from Silverstone.
Uh-huh. So you sort of living in the middle counties there?
Yeah, it's a perfect spot for all the race tracks. We're quite central to everywhere.
Mm. And, of course, I should ask this, how are you going to enjoy New Year's Eve 2000?
Spend it with my mates here.
Uh-huh.
We've got a party that we've all organised, and we all got some firecrackers yesterday, and it should be really good.
All right, then. Well, James, enjoy the rest of your time in Australia. I would imagine that you're enjoying some real summer rather than that stuff we got to enjoy in June there.
Yeah. It's looking a bit like in England, in Sydney. It's raining quite a bit.
Well, we wish you all the best for the year 2000, and particularly with the Formula Fords. Van Diemen's are going to, I'm sure, give you every support, and that should make for a very exciting year for you.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks very much, James Courtney.
Thank you.
Now, you were formerly working with Ann Neill. In South Australia is John Evans. And, John, a very exciting return to a racing action in the World Series with, Donny Schott's not able to keep up that great run in the final month. Or the final 2 months of 1999.
That's correct, Craig. It's been quite fascinating. Since Christmas, there's been a huge transition in the series, although Schott still leads. We've had a succession of different winners. Donny started out with 6 consecutive wins on a trot, a new World Series record. But since then, we've seen wins to Brooke Tatnall, Max Dumsey and Skip Jackson, which has severely reduced the lead that Schott's once enjoyed.
And in fact, Brooke Tatnall was the first to break the drought on, 29th of December?
The 27th of December, we were in Adelaide Speedway City, and Schott's seemed to be able to reproduce his winning form before the Christmas break when he led the first 25 laps only for the front end to break, and 5 laps in the finish of putting together 7 successive wins. But Brooke went on to take victory and inflict the first defeat. And then the next night we were at Blue Ribbon Raceway in Horsham, and Skip Jackson was able to lead from start to finish to put Schott's back in the second position. From there we moved across into Gippsland in Victoria for the round at Nyora Speedway, and that was the first win since 1997 at that same track for 3-time World Series champion Max Dumsey. And Schott's had a fairly miserable evening there after losing a wheel at the start of his heat race.
Mm. And, in fact, Donny Schott's not even making the feature race for the 16-car... finishing 10th, with Brooke Tatnall, Skip Jackson and Andrew Sherrill both up in the top 5, and really meaning that they have now opened up an opportunity on the American to once again be competitive in the final stages or in the final quarter of the World Series Championship.
That's how we ran last night, a traditional New Year's Day meeting at Premier Speedway in Waterloo in front of a massive crowd, and it was a really exciting event. Schott's smashed the 6-lap record in a dash and started from pole position, but in the race to the first corner, trying to get ahead of Jackson, he got completely sideways in front of the field and was fortunate to avoid being hit by the pack charging behind him and dropped to 7th place. And he could only get back up to 6th by the finish, and the race was won by Brooke Tatnall ahead of Gary Brazier and Jackson. So those three in particular are starting to make significant inroads into the points lead to the stage now, where it's only 1 win difference between Schott's in 1st and Tatnall in 2nd.
Now, for the people listening to this and want to keep up with all the Round 11 action in the World Series Sprint Cars but can't get to Mount Gambier tonight, www.sprintcarworld.com.au www.sportsradio.com/WSS is the internet address where, of course, there will be live chat rooms, and I'm not sure about the commentary this week.
No, we won't have live commentary tonight, but there will be someone from the track who will be feeding all information as far as time trials, heat results, and the finishing positions in the feature. They'll also be updating progressively throughout the night as the feature goes on.
Mm. So an easy way to keep up with the events happening in the middle of the country. And, John, happy New Year to you. It's been a fairly busy one to start with.
Thanks, Craig, and we'd like to wish a happy New Year and all the best to all your listeners. We'll be travelling down the road a fair bit over the next couple of weeks and heading up into your territory. Now, we move from Mount Gambier tonight onto Murray Bridge for the inaugural World Series meeting there tomorrow night. And then on Wednesday, we run at Winds Newcastle Speedway, and then the following Friday and Saturday at Parramatta City Raceway.
Well, hopefully you can bring some of that western and central weather with you, because over in, of course, Victoria and New South Wales, we've had a heck of a lot of rain.
Well, believe me, tonight it's just sunny skies. It's the first time we've been without a sort of rain since Christmas, so we're all looking forward to bringing some sunshine to New South Wales.
John Evans, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again.
Thanks, Craig.
Well, it's been a while since we've had him on the show, but it's a warm welcome back to our very good friend in North America, Peter Norton. And Peter, Happy New Year to you.
It has been a while since I've done a report. As the temperatures here are -5, -10 during the day, there's not a lot of motorsport activity outside these days. But we still have quite a bit of activity in the press rooms and things like that. People are still up to their usual fun and games, getting ready for the next season. Let's start with NASCAR. And one of the more humorous developments there is they've got a new sponsor. One of the teams has a new sponsor, that is. Now, we know that NASCAR have been particularly successful in their marketing and the commercialization of the sport, the fastest growing sport in the USA. We've got teams sponsored by the usual oil companies and automotive products. But then, of course, they branch out McDonald's and Tide, which is a washing powder. Well, add to that list Viagra, that miracle drug that is helping all sorts of men with erectile dysfunction. They're adding some of their money to one of the teams, one of the lesser-known teams, and the driver is Jeff Fuller. They're also putting a bit of money into men's health promotion, where Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, and Bobby Labonte will be putting their names and faces to some of the promotional efforts there. Also for NASCAR next year, Robbie Gordon will be joining them. Robbie has been a bit of a journeyman of United States motorsport. A couple of years ago, showed a great deal of promise in kart. Sort of went out of favour there with some of his erratic driving and a little bit inconsistent. And last year, he almost won the Indy 500 with fuel running out of fuel, and the strategy there didn't quite come together. But he had a full year in kart. Didn't quite have all of the big bucks there to invest in the development side of things. Found it pretty tough. So next year, he will be the other Gordon in NASCAR. And, of course, that will add to all sorts of confusion when people are screaming, Gordon does this, Gordon does that. We'll have to distinguish between Robbie and Jeff. And Jeff Gordon, of course, he had a pretty tough year this year. I mean, previously, he was the man to beat. He sort of was dominant for four straight years, where he won three championships and finished second in the other. 1999 was just not quite as kind for him. And particularly in the last third of the year, Ray Evenham, Gordon's crew chief and mentor since he joined Hendrick Motorsports in 93, he sort of left abruptly. He was wooed away to form his own team, and he's going to lead Dodge's re-entry into the Stock Car Series in 2001. And, of course, that was a great loss to that team. But the problems keep going for the Hendrick Motorsports and Jeff Gordon crew there. With less than a month from the end of the year, there were five members of the Rainbow Warrior race day crew, who were considered to be the best in the business in recent years. They announced that they were packing up and they're going to work for Dale Jarrett in the year 2000. So another great loss there. Gordon's got still a lot of work to do to rebuild. Immediately after those announcements during the year, of course, Gordon and his new crew chief, they sort of put a few things together. They won two races in a row. But after that, they really did struggle for the rest of the year. So the Jeff Gordon fans are really hoping for much better things in the year 2000. Other news in NASCAR include some pretty tough and sad news that NASCAR president Bill France Jr., has got cancer of some sort. They haven't announced exactly what it is. And he's been the president of NASCAR since 1972. and he's going to step back a little bit in his day-to-day running of the sport to concentrate on some medical treatment and stuff, but he'll still be there at the head guiding the sport in a number of roles. So we all wish Bill all the very best there in his battle ahead. Start of the season, which kicks off again, of course, in Daytona. February 13 is the Bud Shootout, where they get a whole field full of racers and they race out, and there's only one prize. First place gets pole position a week later in the Daytona 500, and all the rest have to go through the usual qualifying routines there. Over across into the world of kart, of course, they had a very sad end to the season, and all of their presentation dinners and everything like that were really quite a little bit somber. And they announced that the number of their fallen hero, Greg Moore, he, of course, carried the number 99, they're going to retire that number. They don't want anyone else using it in future as a mark of respect to their lost up-and-coming driver. And that's only the second number that they've retired. The other number that is retired is number 14 from AJ Foyt. Other news in kart is a few more sponsors have decided to leave the sponsorship of the series. And in kart, of course, it's currently known as the FedEx Championship. But a few years ago, it was the PPG Cup. Of course, the automotive products maker PPG, very big name in the sport, and they've been associated with it ever since I can remember. They've decided to pull out of sponsoring kart as well. And this follows Goodyear, who decided not to to support kart or IRL. And next year, they're going to concentrate on NASCAR alone. So I think the fallout is still continuing there because of kart and IRL couldn't come together and rejoin into a one series for North America. Al Unser Jr., of course, is going to be a rookie next year in the IRL. That's quite an ironic twist, isn't it? Someone who's definitely headed for the Motorsport Hall of Fame having a rookie year. But I guess we had that with Nigel Mansell in kart a few years back as well. Also in IRL, a bit of talk about the Indy 500 for next year. Now, of course, kart have left a two-week gap in their schedule so that some of their teams will be permitted to go and race at Indianapolis. And this will be the first time since 1996 that some of these teams will be returning to the famous Brickyard. Now, a lot of teams have been making inquiries about leasing a chassis and engine deals and that type of thing, and this is where it's getting a little bit interesting. It's all, the IRL, of course, runs control engines. You have to have either an Oldsmobile or a Nissan engine, and they cost about $1 million to enter the Indy 500. So these teams have to come up with some pretty serious bucks to race at the Brickyard. And, of course, in kart, a lot of their sponsorship deals revolve around the engine that they carry. Mercedes, Honda, Ford, they're all putting in some big money to compete in the kart series, and this is where some of the tensions are rising. And in particular, the Ford organization, they've said to Newman Haas' team and Bobby Rahal that they're definitely not happy with the situation, because both teams have expressed their interest in racing at Brickyard. Ford are really quite concerned about one of their leading Ford teams winning the Indy 500, but carrying perhaps an Oldsmobile engine. That would not be good. Ford have said they're not happy, but they're not going to stand in the way. And, of course, some of the teams are sort of reading that as a nod as good as a wink type deal, that, yes, we're not going to stand in your way, but we'd rather you didn't, so don't. So there's still a lot of politics there stopping some of these teams from racing back at the Brickyard. Now, of course, at the end of each year, we have the usual debates about who's the driver of the year. This year, we've got a few more elements to that. We can debate who's the driver of the decade, driver of the century, and perhaps also somewhat redundantly, you know, driver of the millennium, which really is the same as driver of the century in many respects. Now, most publications have had their own results of who they consider to be driver of the century. And one here that I'd like to discuss a little bit with you, Craig, and get your thoughts, coming from a poll by the Associated Press. They've gathered a panel of experts to come up with a worldwide, apparently, driver of the century. The people on the panel included NASCAR president Bill France, Richard Petty, Jackie Stewart, among others. And they're trying to get a good balance there to represent all the different countries. And in third place, they decided was Fangio, finished with 42 points. Now, of course, Fangio was regarded by many people as driver of the century, best ever, particularly considering the era in which he drove, that not many of these guys are still alive. There were so many accidents. But this guy managed to stay safe and just won so many things. So it's surprising that he was rated way back in third. And I think this is where some of the North American bias perhaps sneaks into things. Because it was a dead heat for first and second. Mario Andretti and AJ Foyt, a dead heat for driver of the century. And they both received 47 points each. So it's just interesting to look at the relative achievements here. My bias is that perhaps it shouldn't be a dead heat. But let's have a look at what their scorecards were. Before Mario Andretti retired in 1994, he won four national championships, as well as the 1978 Formula One title. And other things that he got up to was the Indy 500 in 1967, 1969 the Indy 500, and he also won the Sebring 12-hour race three times. He won 12 Formula One events, and he trails only AJ Foyt in the IndyCar wins. So he's got 52. So a very diverse range of wins there, particularly the success he had in Europe in Formula One. Now, AJ Foyt, on the other hand, he never gave Formula One a try, and I think that's where it becomes very hard to compare these guys. But AJ's tally includes, of course, various Indy 500 wins and North American victories. He also won the 24-hour race at Le Mans in 1967, four wins at the Indianapolis 500, and I think that's where the weighting was placed by the judges. And he won the 1972 Daytona 500. And, of course, both of these guys, after they've retired, have remained to be part of the sport. They've got differing political views, IRL and CART type stuff, but, OK, you get that. I think they're both pretty good ambassadors for their respective sports. So, anyway, I'll agree to disagree on that ranking. I would put Andretti first, particularly because of the weighting in Formula One. But is he truly better than a whole list of European drivers that you could also add to this consideration? I think, yeah, this ranking was a little bit narrow-minded in its lack of recognition of some of the other European drivers. But maybe that reflects the background of the judges. And, of course, I mean, everyone else has their ranking. Craig, I'm sure you've got thoughts of your greatest driver as well. And I think all of the other publications, this debate could go on for the next century. But anyway, that was it for drivers. There's also, what was the car of the century? 3 years ago, an organisation tried to come up with a competition to work out car of the century. And it was put together by an international panel of motoring journalists and experts. I think there was about 112 people, 112 jurors in 33 different countries, so a much broader European, North American, Japanese balance in all of this. And it started 3 years ago. They selected 100 cars that they thought were the 100 most significant developments in the automotive industry. So it's slightly different focus here, automotive rather than racing. And in the last couple of months, they narrowed it down to five finalists. And we'll run through those in backwards, of course, to build the suspense. And in fifth, the Porsche 911. It won 303 points. Okay, that sounds fine. I think quite surprising at fourth was the Volkswagen Beetle with 521 points. A lot of people were expecting that to rate much higher because it was really quite a significant vehicle and, of course, sold so many millions and millions of it. Ahead of the Beetle was the Citroën DS with 567 points. I don't know much about Citroën, so I found that one quite surprising. And the real surprise, at second, to me at least, was the Austin Mini, 617 points. Okay, I guess it was quite significant as well, the first of the really compact cars, and it did sell many vehicles. And I don't think there's too many surprises, really, about what came out at top. And comfortably ahead, 742 points was the Ford Model T. And yes, in so many ways, it was a breakthrough, not so much in design, but more of the manufacturing methods, the production line, and Henry Ford's vision to sell it to just about everyone in the U.S., changing the focus of the automobile from just the rich and the elite through to the everyday family could own a vehicle. So that was it for the journalist-selected car of the century. I don't have the results for the, they had an online voting part for the popular choice of car of the century. I think that probably the Model T won that one as well, because it really does stand out. Although I was disappointed that the Mustang didn't win. As I said, anyone could get onto the internet and vote for that one, and I must have logged 40 or 50 votes for the Mustang, but I don't think there's any surprises there. So that's the way I see it from over here. It's been a very interesting and exciting year, marked with some fantastic achievements and also some pretty deep tragedy as well. And we're all looking forward to a very exciting year next year. Thanks, Craig.
Yes, thanks very much, Peter Norton. And his Postcards from America will be heard right throughout next season, as the lucky bastard still gets to spend another season in North America. Look, there's a lot of great motorsport events in the world, and one that I got news today, and I'm going to read it as they've printed it here. No other motorsport event can boast a list of winners so distinguished, as well as an outstanding cast of at least elite international representatives. The Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona was in its infancy in 1962 when the Daytona International Speedway set out to make its first major statement in the world of sports car racing. The then known Daytona Continental, the Speedway established a forum for speed and precision matched by few other events in motorsport. From its beginning, rosters of drivers in the 24-hour endurance race read like a world map, with the great European talented racing teaming with American racers. The international flair gives the race universal appeal. Americans Dan Gurney won in 62, Phil Hill in 64, Mark Donohue in 66, and Lloyd Ruby in 65-66 championed the American causes in the 60s, with Mexican legend Pedro Rodriguez, who would win the first Rolex 24-hour in 1963. Europeans would win the first of four Rolex 24-hours, sorry, in 1963. The Europeans, Rolf Stollmann in 68, 78, 80 and 82 of Germany, Joe Stifford in 68 of Switzerland, the Italian superstar Lorenzo Bernini in 67, along with Ken Mills in 65, 66, Victor Elford in 68 of Great Britain took their turns at the podium in the 60s as well. American drivers produced more victories at the 24-hour Daytona than any other nationality in the 70s. Future world champion Mario Andretti won in 72, Peter Gregg in 73, 75, 76 and 78. The all-time Rolex 24 champ Earl Haywood in 73, 75, 77, 79 and 91, amazingly enough, engraved their names in the now rich history of the still young event. The partnership of Belgian Jack Hicks and American Andretti proved successful in 72. England's Brian Redman attacked the high banks with reckless abandon to capture his first of two victories in 76. In the 80s, in 1980, Rolf Stollmann, Wirt Merle and Rain Jost made a German statement as they drove a Porsche to twice around-the-clock dominance. It was the first of nine Porsche victories in the 80s. Americans' contribution in victory lane in the 80s were made by a multiple of 500 Indianapolis winners, A.J. Foyt in 83 and 85, Al Unser in 85, and Al Unser Jr. in 86 and 87. IMSA great Al Herbert in 86-87, the Kart and Winston Cup winner John Andretti in 89, France's Bob Wallach scored his first of four wins in 83, whilst Britain's Andy Wallace scored his first of three wins, leading the Jaguar assault of 1990. The 90s produced a great finishes and memorable performances in the Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona, perhaps none more memorable than the versatile Italian Giandro Morinetti in a Ferrari in 1998. Ford led an American resurgence back to victory with Rob Dyson in 97 and 99, and two-time winner John Paul Jr. in 97 and 99 as well, with Elliot Forbes Robinson part of that team. The three-time winner Butch Leitzinger in 94, 97 and 99 also were part of the great success for the Americans. Dan Gurney's All-American Races, Toyota's featured drivers like PJ Jones, Mark Dismal and Ricky Moran, who won in 93. Japan and Nissan prevailed in 92 with Masahiro Hashimi and Katsuhiro Hiroshino and Toshio Suzuki. New Zealand and South Africa were represented respectively by Steve Millen and Wayne Taylor in 96, and a great history in this event. Masters of many forms of auto racing, all parts of the globe, have come to Daytona to compete against the best the world has to offer. Part of the Rolex 24 Hours' great appeal is the nationalistic pride that resonates from start to finish, a pride born of traditional, of international excellence. I thought you'd enjoy that one. But practice starts for the the Rolex 24 Hour at Daytona. Practice starts on January the 8th. So we'll be keeping you right up to date with that event as the Rolex 24 at Daytona does kick off in Fury. Hey, we're about to change shifts here very soon. I just want to go through a couple of quick stories. A new story that I'm going to follow up on next week is that Ford Racing today announced a single-make kart series named the Ford Rotax Challenge, a logical extension of Ford's Australia's commitment to fostering local motorsport. The series has been confirmed for an initial 3 years, beginning this year in 2000. It will be operated in conjunction with Australia's leading kart manufacturer, Drew Price Engineering. The top 4 year 2000 drivers from a field restricted to 28 competitors will be taken with their race engineer to the Caribbean to compete in the Rotax Max World Challenge Final against 80 of the world's most promising young drivers. One driver will also be selected to take part in a developmental program for Formula Ford. The introduction of the Ford Rotax Challenge is a significant opportunity for young drivers to enter a well-organized competition competitive series at a minimum entry age of 16 years. To ensure that all drivers are focused on the challenge, a sealed 28-horsepower water-cooled Rotax engine from an engine pool will be supplied to each competitor at the races, along with a wet and dry set of Bridgestone control tyres. The entry fee for this one, cop this, $15,000. Now that includes a kart with an engine, technical support, race apparel, fuel, oil, chains, tyres, engine services, the lot. The drivers get to keep everything at the end of the season. So we will be following that one up, in fact. Now, because Peter doesn't know much about drag racing, he freely admits to that, I will just wrap up this week's show with some NHRA news, because following the motto of the Boy Scouts, be prepared, two-time NASCAR Winston Top Fuel champion Gary Selsey wants to be prepared for whatever his racing future might hold. To that end, the affable driver from Fresno, California, has asked for and been granted permission from team owner Alan Johnson to get a license in his new teammate's Bruce Savard's funny car. Talking funny cars, funny car pilot Gary Demption has certainly been busy this week. The 53-year-old favourite signed a 2-year contract extension with one of his primary sponsors, the Auto Club of Southern California, and gained the service of veteran wrench Larry Myers. Now, in pro stock races news, Mike Thomas and Mark Pork added to their 2000 war chests with the announcement of associate sponsors this week, Pennzoil. Thomas, major sponsor in 1999, will be back on board at an associate level, while Pork will join the Matco Tools team for the year 2000. Look, I hope you had a very happy and safe New Year's Eve. I know that we'll be looking forward to giving you a lot more motorsport and a lot more great coverage right throughout Inside Motorsport in the year 2000 as we get set for another big year's racing. I hope you can be with us next time round.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of SSFM Canberra via Comrade SAS with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.